Take risks. Lead by example. Believe in your power. Say what you feel, mean what you say. Hi, I'm Leslie Ann Sion, host of the new podcast series, Sion 180. I came across these powerful expressions in an Instagram moment while prepping for Sion 180. They really resonated with me as the justification for embarking on this exciting new venture, Sion 180. Sion 180 is a platform for frank, fearless, and fun discussions that move you beyond neutral to help refuel your drive at your pace, no matter the age or gender. Get ready to go the distance and make changes that are necessary to be your best self. Join me at Sion 180 on this journey of discovery and advancement.
Searching for that ideal house or rental property with a picture-perfect view of the ocean or lush green hills and breeze that gently caresses your face? Century 21 Grenada helps our clients to go beyond the search to living. At Century 21, our agents understand that a home isn't just walls and a roof, but a sacred, inspiring place where you learn, laugh, play, and create. Contact us today at c21grenada.com or give us a call at 473-440-5227. Go beyond with Century 21.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Sion 180. I am your host, Leslie Ann Sion. This is episode 5. Please visit my website at sion180.com for all episodes current and past, or follow me and join our growing community on our Facebook and Instagram pages. On the last episode of Sion 180, we had the pleasure of sitting down with Melinda Peter, a financial consultant out of Barbados, who discussed ways in which we can create a financially secure present and future using simple tips that are proven to work, and starting the discussions on money matters with children from an early age right in the home. Thank you, Melinda, for that very robust and enlightening discussion that I'm sure our listeners thoroughly enjoyed. Today on the show, we have a very special guest with us, my friend Michael Archibald, a retired banker, chairman of the Eastern Caribbean Asset Management Corporation, a member of Grenada's legal counsel. Michael has given over 39 years to the banking industry, working in local, regional, and international banks. He's worked his way through all the departments, from teller to chief executive officer. He has served with distinction on many boards of directors, including as chairman of the Grenada Development Bank, the Caribbean Association of Indigenous Banks, Eastern Caribbean Organization of Development Foundation. He's been a director on the Grenada Cultural Foundation, a trustee of the Caribbean Court of Justice Trust Fund, and also host of the TV program Business Files. And did I mention that he is a very dear friend and colleague? Yes, he is. And I invited him to join us today to chat about leadership, styles and challenges of leadership, the qualities and competencies of leadership, and what qualities one should possess to become a successful leader. Welcome, Michael, and thank you for joining us today on Sion 180.
Thank you, Lancia, and thank you. And I'm very pleased that you have asked me to join you tonight. I'm looking forward to a discussion.
And I as well. I have to tell you a little secret. I know that you did an address on leadership some time ago, and a colleague of ours shared that script with me, and it was definitely an additional source of inspiration for me undertaking this podcast, Sion 180. So I feel like I've come full circle because this is our final episode for season one.
Well, I'm happy that it was of some use, that you found it useful and inspiring. Thank you very much.
Exactly, and I put it into action. So, Michael, we want to discuss the very layered and complex topic of leadership and leadership styles. And you have been a leader for so many years, as I described to our audience. What are some of the different leadership styles that you experienced in your career? Can you tell us about that?
There are about four or five leadership styles that I recognize as the most dominant and the ones that you come across most often. But let me say this though, people could be a mixture of those styles. People could exhibit a mixture of those styles. So you have four or five styles. The most dominant ones are what you call the bureaucratic style, the authoritarian style, the democratic style, one that is called the laissez-faire style, strangely, and the charismatic style. Those are the ones that are most accepted, but they are called by different names. Some people call the charismatic style the peacock style, but it's the same thing. And an individual could fit in between two styles or exhibit more of one style than the other. But those are the five dominant styles.
I see. I like the reference to laissez-faire style. What does that suggest really for leadership?
the title always makes me laugh.
It's a strange dichotomy. Yes.
Yes. Yes. It is the manager who, or the leader or the manager who sees their role as on the periphery. Provide whoever they're leading with the resources and let them get to work. As against the authoritarian person who is right above you all the time, ordering you, instructing you what to do, etc. They're the opposites of each other.
Right.
And then there's a bureaucratic style, the one who says, it is written in the book, you have the rules and regulations, just follow the rules and regulations.
Rigid.
Yeah.
Can you graduate from one type of leadership style to another while still being a leader?
Yes, you can learn. There's this old argument about whether a leader is born,
yes,
or a leader is made. And I think the discussion has centered around now, and there's consensus that leadership is a skill, a set of skills and competencies that you can learn to become a good leader. So you can make yourself into a good leader. Yes, you might be born with some of the attributes that make it easy. At least you have some. But there are others that need to be learned. There are competencies in particular that need to be learned. So if you want to aspire to be a leader, there are several competencies that you have to learn how to do. You have to develop yourself or go where you can develop them. And to give you an example, there are five of them that I think are particularly important. Now, when I'm referring to a competency in my mind is made up of three parts. For you to be competent in something, you have to have knowledge about that thing. You have to have skills that goes along with it. And you have your own personal attributes.
Yes.
Yeah, that will be whether you're honest, you're reliable, that those sort of attributes. So those make up competencies. And the competency that I think a leader needs is five I want to talk about. The first one is what I call strategic competence. A leader must have a vision of where he or she wants to go, a set of goals that they want to attain. And they must be able to look at the big picture. That does not mean you forget the day-to-day or the details, yes, but you must focus more time on the future, where you want to go, where you want to take yourself, your organization, if you're a politician, your country or your party, where is it I want it? You can't be thinking about just today.
Short-term, long-term vision.
Must have long-term vision. Mm-hmm. The second competency I think is very important is what is called human relations competency. A leader must be able to understand people. There's these fancy terms that are used now called the emotional intelligence.
Right, I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, you must have a knack to understand people. If you want to lead people, you must understand them. If you can't understand them, if you don't know how to manage people, then you will never be a good leader, because in fact, a leader leads people. The third one, which I think is critical, is self-management. You must know yourself. You must be able to manage yourself. Too many of us, including too many of our leaders, can't manage our own self. we can't manage ourselves. We blow up, we get angry, we do strange things when we're under pressure. You must be able to manage yourself in the most stressful situations. So you have to have the strategic competence. You have to be able to understand people because you're leading people. Then thirdly, you must be able to understand yourself.
And what you need to do in the circumstances. Yes.
And manage yourself, in other words.
Yeah.
And usually leaders come up through some career stream. So you have the most leaders have some sort of technical competence. I came up through the banking stream. You're a lawyer. So that's our technical stream. So if you look at most leaders, they came to their leadership positions through some technical competence. Because if I'm a banker and I can't make progress in banking, I will never get up to be a leader. If you're a lawyer and you're not a good lawyer, if you do not have the technical expertise to be a lawyer, you won't get anywhere. So that usually, in the Caribbean, we have had a lot of leaders who came up through the trade union movement.
Correct.
Right? So whatever your technical career path is, usually a leader would have that technical competence. And the last one is administrative competence. You must be able to handle the day-to-day work and make schedules, reports, make things happen. Otherwise, if you can't do that, then everything will collapse around you. So I'm saying all of this to say you need, I look at leadership in terms of those five competencies. And you can learn them. You can learn how to be a bit better administrative. You can learn administrative competence. You can learn how to manage yourself. You can learn people. So these are all things that you can learn. And each competence, remember, is made up of knowledge, skills, and your personal attributes.
So how do you go about learning these skills without showing your superiors, let's say, in an organization or a corporation, that this is a weakness? I'm supposed to be a leader and I'm still learning, or I need to learn and I need to develop myself more. How do I develop that skill of doing it on the job as a leader?
Well, I am of the view that the more open you are with people, the better for you. And I learned when I was making my way up in the bank that if I didn't know something, I'd come straight out and said, I don't know it. I did not understand it, and I will learn it. So I did not attempt to, and I suggest you don't attempt to hide the fact that you have a weakness. Identify the weakness or a lack of skill in a particular area, and then go about openly learning that skill. Go about trying to understand that skill and improve yourself in that skill. So I won't suggest at all that you try to do it on the sly, sort of. But be open. Openness, I have found, is a thing. While it scares us to be too open, makes us vulnerable.
Right.
But it also makes us human, and I think people react to it in a more positive way than you would think.
And I think in today's modern world, it's a lot easier for you to develop these skills and to be trained and to learn these things because you can do it online. You can do it privately.
Oh yes.
And there's no excuse.
Leslie, I couldn't agree with you more. There's no excuse now for not developing yourself.
Yeah.
Personal development. There's just so many opportunities and so many ways that you can do it. I found myself looking through something the other day and said, I must do this.
Yes.
At this stage of my life, I'm still looking at something. I think I need to learn more about this and improve myself in this area. So I agree with you. There's so much you can do that it would be a shame. And I don't understand anybody who says that they can't.
Exactly. We had a previous guest, I think actually on our very first episode, who talked about curiosity and curiosity leading you to other competencies and, being able to develop yourself along those lines. Now, this brings me to a comment you made earlier about leadership. And we're talking about leadership in times of change, leadership in times of crisis. And what draws out an effective leader in circumstances such as we have now in a post-pandemic era? Whether it's a business, whether it's a church, whether it's a school, whether it's a political party, they're all facing a crisis as a result of the pandemic.
not only pandemic, one of our modern day thinkers at Harvard University said that the world has never needed courageous, good leaders as much as it needs right now.
Correct.
And she was looking back in the history, and she was saying that right now, it is more important. The world is in such a state that we need courageous, brave leaders more than ever. You have the pandemic, you have the war with Russia, you have global warming. These things are not easily settled. And we need to have leaders in the world, we need to have leaders in the Caribbean, we need to have leaders in our country. Unfortunately, too many of us look, when we think of leaders, we think only, in the case of a country like Grenada, only of the prime minister. Or we look at a company and we think of the CEO. But there are leaders at every stage down the road. And those leaders, in my mind, are not taking up the mantle of leadership. A supervisor in an organization is a leader.
Yes.
They might not be the senior leader, but they're a leader. And unfortunately, we don't see ourselves when we're in those positions as leaders, and we sort of abdicate the whole thing to the person who's at the top. And that, I think, is most unfortunate. To go back to your question, we need leaders now, and leaders need to be very careful of how they deal with the crises that are facing us. They have to be very brave and very courageous. But there's some steps that were recommended by some people out of Harvard. And one of the things a leader has to get accustomed to is ambiguity. Because things are changing so fast, it would sound strange to say that somebody has to get accustomed to ambiguity, Leslie.
Yes.
But things are changing so fast. Information is coming at you all the time.
24/7.
It's not like long ago where you sit down and, oh, this is today and that comes to you tomorrow and the next day. No, it's coming at you every second. So therefore, things are ambiguous and you have to get accustomed to operating and making decisions in times of ambiguity. The second thing a leader in change, all leaders, but a leader in times of crisis particularly needs to be concerned about is communication. Open communication, regular communication, talking to your people all the time, making sure that you tell them the facts, the facts, the facts. Don't dress it up. Don't hide the negative or the dangers or the challenges. But at the same time, don't spend all your time talking about only the challenges. You also have to communicate that there's optimism, there's a tomorrow. So the communication part is very, very important. If there's a particular crisis, I think the leader must frame the crisis properly. This is where we are. This is where we want to go. Or this is where we were. This is where we are. This is where we want to go. You see, people will spend a lot of time focusing on the challenge or the difficulty. And you as a leader has to, yes, talk about it, but you also have to bring them out of that fear. And the only way you can do that is by regular communication that frames the problem or the challenge properly and then talks about the future. Those are some of the steps that the leader in crisis must take. There are a few more, but those that I remember.
Yeah, those are some of the major steps. You mentioned that, and that brings me to, you know, what we talked about just now, the conflict in Ukraine and the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. And there emerged, in the midst of this crisis, Zelensky, the president, as an outstanding leader who's rallying a nation of lions to fight an almighty superpower, and calling out the West for, you know, sitting back and really almost acting like cowards. It's an amazing story to see an actor emerge as this outstanding leader. And that's why I say sometimes, don't always scoff at the comment that they are natural born leaders. There's an instinct that comes out, I believe, in times of challenge and crisis. And Zelensky is an example of that, I believe.
But if he was not willing to improve as he's going along, you see, you have to improve. There are certain things, because he was an actor, he knows how to communicate.
Right.
And if you notice, what he's doing is communicating. But that's he's also learning, and he's framing the crisis every time he speaks. He's framing it. He's laying out all the difficulties and the challenges for the world to see. So he's actually following some of the same steps that are recommended. But the fact that he's an actor, it means that he can communicate those things very well. And he is doing that. You know who did a very good job? Cuomo in New York.
Yes.
During the, no, he messed himself up after. But yes. During the crisis,
yep,
he did an excellent job of managing that crisis, keeping New Yorkers together, keeping them looking to the future for this new normal, etc. He did an excellent job. In the steps, if you can follow those steps from people like that.
Mm-hmm. How do we find potential leaders like them? You know, whether it's Cuomo, whether it's Zelensky, other world leaders, how do we find them in the Caribbean? How do we spot them? In whether it's in a small organization or a large organization, when we spot them, how do we groom them into leadership?
I went to a training course in Ireland in the 80s, a training course for CEOs. And one of the things they told us is to walk around your staff. Get out of your office. Get out of this office that you're sitting in if you're the CEO. And get out and walk around and mix with your people all the time. And when you spot somebody who's exhibiting what you want, pull them out. Put them in a special program if you can. Move them upward because they're exhibiting the qualities and the characteristics that you want to see. They might not have them all. They might not have the knowledge. But if they're showing it. And there were two of us from the Caribbean. And we were very worried about doing something like that because the immediate reaction of your existing other staff is that you like that person. You know, you like that person. Not seeing that what you saw somebody in that individual. So it takes a lot of courage to do that. Because your people, your same people that you are leading could misunderstand what you're trying to do. And you would get the charges of bias, etc. But we have to find a way that when we identify somebody who's exhibiting some of those qualities,
yes,
to pull them out, pull them along with you, pull them out and try to move them. Because if we don't, we will lose them.
Absolutely. Because, yeah. and you see, that is a fault that I find we have a lot in our small communities in the Caribbean, that the first thing that we say is, oh, this person is favoring so-and-so, and yeah, you know, yeah, they're biased, yeah, against me. But you have to be able, when you spot the talent, to immediately seize on it and start to groom and develop it. Otherwise, you know, what are we doing? We can't be a leader forever. We've got to pass the baton on, and we'll discuss that later on in the conversation. And too many of us, I think, are content to be followers, and we don't want to be put even within the vision of leadership because we're afraid we have to take hard decisions that might make us unpopular. And so we fear the elevation because we don't want to step up to the plate and be unpopular, so to speak. What do we tell people who are sitting on the fence to encourage them to come out of that?
You know, let's go back a bit, what you just said. People are actually afraid of promotion. Some people are afraid of promotion.
Yes,
they're afraid of moving up into the key positions,
yes,
because they're aware that while you might get a higher salary or get some more perks, you have decisions to make, tough, hard decisions if you're a leader, that are often not popular. So you're very right in saying that people are sometimes scared, because when you have, first you have to analyze yourself and see what your weaknesses are. And people are afraid to do that also. Because they don't, when they see the weaknesses, they get worried. Instead of thinking in terms of how do I correct this or learn or develop or strengthen that weakness, they go in the next direction. Oh, I'm afraid of this, I can't do that. You know? So how to answer your question, I can't answer it directly, but I think leaders have to have the guts and the belly to identify people who are exhibiting the willingness to take on the load, the willingness to move up, the willingness to learn, in particular, personal development, and try to work and pull those people up, pull them out from where they are. Difficult as that is in a small community, because you're going to get accused of all sorts of things when you do that.
That's correct. But you have to be focused and just do what you know to be right, and the principles by which you are guided. That's what will put you in good stead. I think that a lot of the times leadership is thrust upon us in adulthood, and we don't pay attention to leadership skills from the time we're in school.
I agree, we don't.
And so we need to have that as part of the curriculum. Because what we have is a generation of people hiding behind screens and devices, operating from behind the scenes and thinking that that's how you get to the top. That's ambition. And so when you put them out in the front, in the vanguard, all of a sudden you have a completely different persona and someone who is insecure and lacking in confidence.
And so
how do we tell our educators, our teachers, our ministries of education to start analyzing and reassessing the curriculum to build some of these developments?
I don't know how we're going to go about doing that, but it's absolutely necessary that we find a way to do it. Because people, you know, and one of the things that bother me about Grenada right now is that we have become so confrontational that we no longer seem to be able to have a debate or a discussion in which we can disagree. I should be able to disagree with you, Leslie, and you disagree with me, and we're fine after that. Yeah. We are somewhere at the stage in Grenada now that if I disagree with you, I am almost getting, I have to get confrontational about it to the extent that people are almost getting physical.
Yes.
No, I'm serious. I mean, we need to get back to the stage where we can talk about things without becoming so confrontational. And that and going back to your question, there are good people out there who won't talk, who won't open their mouth.
Yeah.
If you give them a microphone, they won't speak because they know that their opinion might not necessarily be the opinion of the crowd.
Right.
And the reaction
Yes. Is
going to be so negative and so harsh that they prefer not to say anything. And I think therefore we are stifling some potential leaders. So the ones that do come forward, you have to admire them.
You mentioned something earlier which I thought was highly instructive, because I've seen it so many times in various organizations where leaders sit on their thrones and never descend and mix with their followers or their staff or their units. And they think that that is how you rule. That is how you lead. You can't really be seen to be mixing with your subordinates. Why is that? How do we break that mold?
Well, I broke it by simply stopping doing it. I spent a lot of time walking around the organization, the bank, the different banks in which I manage. I would walk downstairs and spend some time by the teller line. And I remember when I started doing that, my people said, what is Mr. Archibald doing there? What is he doing? They thought I came to peep at them, see if they were doing their work or not. But they soon came to realize, oh, I was not. I was simply interested in the people, interested in their work, and trying to understand them as individuals. And once you start doing that, and people recognize that you are not just faking it, that you're truly interested in their welfare, the relationship between yourself and your staff steadily changes and improves. You have to, if you are leading people, you have to walk among them. You can't stay and lock yourself into your ivory tower and say, and beat your chest and say, I'm the boss. You know, they must understand your vision for the company. And the way you do that is by mixing with them and talking to them on a constant basis. When I went to another country and I started doing that, again, I got the same reaction at first, until people realized, no, the man is really interested. You know, he's concerned and he's interested. And you'd be surprised what you learn about your company from some of the junior people who are only there 2 and 3 years.
Always
heard
that. You'd
be surprised what you learn.
Yes.
And some of the best ideas come from your staff.
That's right.
Some of the best ideas that I have taken and developed and worked with came from staff members. We have to understand that because we're a leader does not mean that we are the brightest person there. It does not mean that we have all the ideas and we know everything. There are people with lots of ideas working for you, and you need to encourage those people to openly express those ideas, and your company will be better off if you do that.
And not feel threatened by the ideas.
That's where
yes.
You have to have the confidence to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to mention a gentleman called Tony Watkins. He's a personal developer. And I was going through a very bad phase one point when I was losing confidence and you know, things were not going how I wanted them to go, etc. And I was wondering if I was in the right position, if I could really do this job and all of that. And he came to Grenada to do some work with the bank on a different issue completely. But he was a personal developer and he knew something was wrong. And he spent a few days just talking to me. And at the end of the whole thing, part of it had to do with my management style. And he made me realize that your style is yours. You are you. Your style is not better or worse than anybody else's style. And you have experience, you have confidence, you have knowledge. You have confidence in your own self. By the time he was finished with me and I started to think along those lines and realized that my style is not wrong, right? What I have to learn is to adjust my style to fit circumstances. We talked about the styles early on. You can't go wrong if you are an autocratic type, spending your entire day and entire time just being autocratic. There are some circumstances that require you to be democratic. There are some circumstances that require you to be laissez-faire. For instance, if you're heading up a group, a small group, and the group is made up of a bunch of competent people, you don't have to be over their heads looking at them and pointing out in detail what they
need. Micromanaging.
That's right. You just need to give them space and give them the resources.
Let them flourish.
But next week you might be dealing with a group who is new. They don't have that experience and that knowledge. Then you can't be laissez-faire. Then you have to be a lot more, micromanage a lot more. So yes. I'm saying that to say the circumstances must determine the style that you use. And you must be flexible enough to use different styles in different circumstances. Once he got me thinking like that and understanding that, and then having more confidence in my own self, I started doing the things. I came back from the abyss, as I said, started doing the things that made me who I am.
There you go.
Two things. One, I want to encourage young people to talk out, speak out. Despite the fact that we have become so confrontational and we seem to be losing the ability to discuss and debate and disagree in a friendly manner, speak out and express yourself and be brave enough to do it. A lot of the good things in this world rest with our young people. And we have to find a way to encourage them. I want to encourage them also to continue developing. Do not stop developing. Don't think because you get to 30 or 40 minutes, you must stop developing yourself, education-wise and otherwise. So that's it with the young people. The other thing I wanted to leave was just the thought of what leadership is. And I learned this also from the same gentleman I mentioned, Tony Watkins. And he said, leadership is a process of influencing first yourself, then influencing people. So whether it's a political party, it's the people in the party. If it's a company, it's the people in the company. You know what I mean? If it's a team, it's the people in the team. So first off, influencing yourself, then influencing people through change to a particular vision that you have. So if you're a leader, what you're doing, in fact, is influencing people to follow you. And the word influence, sometimes people say, why influence? But remember, there are many ways to influence. You can influence by talking, by persuasion. You can influence by putting a gun to my head also. That's influence. So depending on which kind of leader you are.
Yes.
If you're a leader, what you're really doing is influencing people to behave in a certain way, to do things, to change, to get to where it is you want. If you're a good leader, where you want your company or country to be. That's what leadership is. It's influencing people.
Influencing people and getting them to move towards that goal.
Thank you.
That's a great message to end on, Michael. Thank you so much for joining me in this conversation on Sion 180 and for sharing with us, you know, your frank and forthright experiences as a leader yourself in the banking industry and in business. I appreciate the time that you've spent with me. And I hope to have a chat with you again. Let's see how leadership evolves.
Anytime, anytime, Leslie, anytime.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night. And good night to your listeners.
Thanks. Take care. So thank you again, audience, for joining me on Sion 180. This was episode 5, focused on leadership. And I was chatting with Michael Archibald. Please join us again in May as we kick off season 2 of Sion 180. My goodness, I can hardly believe that we've already completed 5 episodes. Each episode has been unique in theme and message, but all connected in how we get to move beyond neutral, beyond our comfort zones, in motivation, in cultivating good mental health habits, in taking care of and owning our bodies, especially as women, in money management and planning for the future, and today, in honing our leadership styles and becoming better, more effective, strategic leaders, fit for purpose in our respective fields. I truly enjoyed sharing my knowledge and experience with the voices from the Caribbean and enlightening you, entertaining you, and hopefully inspiring you. This has been quite a journey. I've enjoyed every aspect of it. Every episode has been heartwarming and enlightening, robust and fun, forthright, and also informative. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining me on Sion 180. In season 2, we will continue the spotlight on the people and voices of the Caribbean who have excelled in many fields that we have discussed in season 1, so that we can move on from just not advising, but also doing, showing you the folks who've actually practiced what they've preached. And to remind you that, yes, you can also move beyond neutral by exercising some of the very tips that we shared in season 1. I'm so excited for what lies ahead, and I look forward to us continuing this exciting journey of advancement together. This is Sion 180. See you soon. Be safe, everybody.